I miss a green, for example, I'm already upset. When I find my ball in the bunker, I'm really upset. And when I find my ball in a
fried egg.
The dreaded fried egg.
Fried egg lie, I'm about ready to run off the golf course.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back for another edition of the Fried Egg Podcast. We are joined tonight by Tron Carter of No Laying Up and DJ Pihowski of the PGA Tour, runs the Scratch Media, our favorite alternative golf content source that's not independent. So guys, welcome on. Been an exciting 2 days of coverage.
Thanks, Andy. Pumped to be here.
I would say it's been an exciting 2 days. I wouldn't say it's been an exciting 2 days of coverage.
Oh.
Big distinction there.
Today, let's just get it out there. Today was far better.
Yes, yes. 100%.
Massively improved.
So, you know,
it just adds to the effect.
Well, while we're on the coverage, you know, what's been getting at you? Has it been the limited amount of coverage in the morning?
Well, the group were awful. I mean, straight up, they were terrible. It was a disgrace. Hold on, I gotta turn the gas down here, guys. It's getting there. We go. It's getting a little bit too much natural gas going. The feature groups were just not good at all. The fact that nobody made the cut in, I don't think anybody made the cut in either one of the feature groups today in the morning.
Only Luck, maybe Curtis Luck did.
Yeah, he did. I think they were a good combined 40 some over par today.
Yeah, I mean, that's insane. Players.
You know,
that's a miscarriage of justice right there.
I think obviously the situation that's at fault is that, you know, there's just a lack of coverage in the morning, but you know, the feature groups, it's pretty clear you got to win a Masters to be in a feature group. So, you know, Rory just needs to play better.
Yeah, well, all right. So here's the thing. Do they need to do a featured hole on like 2 and 3? Like, those are two good holes.
That would be awesome.
That would be.
Like, those are two great holes.
Great holes. I would enjoy watching those so much more than 11. 11 is kind of a boring hole to watch.
Yeah.
A lot of guys
except
kind of
when Jason Day
right.
has just straight up hubris and tries to get after a flag.
Although the shot John Rahm hit on 11 today, I don't know if you guys saw that, was just absolute stones.
Yeah, he just in general is absolute stones. Guys, he's missed a lot of short putts, and he's still right there. So,
ball striking fiesta.
He works the ball both ways, too. I mean, just, like, without abandon. Like, I've seen him work it just a gnarly draw off of trees. And then he hits that low, stinging cut that makes me fully erect.
And that low snap hook on 15.
I didn't see that one. The power went out today, too. So I didn't – I'm not a great person to talk to about the coverage today just because I missed the first hour of coverage.
So
that's too bad. It was truly delightful today to watch. So much.
So there
stuff.
Was no like SVP soliloquy at the beginning.
I think they got pretty into it.
Yeah, it was just like a couple minutes. It wasn't lengthy like yesterday.
Yesterday they got to go through all the opening ceremony stuff, and they got to. There's obviously and understandably some Arnie stuff to go through and whatever. I mean, it's hard to separate like, you know, how into it the three of us are and the people who listen to this podcast are with.
I get, you know, that. Yeah.
It's hard to separate that with the people who watch golf once a year and, you know.
But here's the thing. So, and this is why I got after Billy Payne on Twitter and not ESPN, because I felt like a lot of that was mandated by Augusta and then, you know, the narrative and kind of just fluffing the Augusta narrative and fluffing the Augusta story, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of one of the traditions unlike any other, though.
Yeah, they got to sell that. I mean, it is what it is, but it's what has propped up the tournament and why, you know, everybody gets so excited about the tournament. So it's like a...
But it seems like there's some sort of disconnect between when I hear something like, oh, we want to televise every shot of every player of the tournament, and they have the capability to show a lot more shots than they've been showing this week. And, like, the Amen Corner, like, props to that team, because that's been a lifesaver this week.
Yeah, it's been super good.
Has been, you know, like, as soon as a non-featured group finally gets the Amen Corner, then you've got them for pretty much the rest of the round.
Yeah, that's the only problem is when you get that perfect storm of, like, featured groups are also at Amen Corner, and it's just, like... Oh, it's just brutal. Like today, I flipped it on. I think I texted you, Tron, after this, but I flipped it on, and Kuchar was the first person that I see play 13. And the first thing I see is him making a birdie putt, and the first words I hear from the announcers are like, you know, oh, so good to see him lay up and make birdie, and now that gets him to just set six shots off the lead now, like.
Well, so Kuchar is paired with the McRib tomorrow, right?
Kuchar is lurking. He's got a big Saturday showdown. You know, I wanted to touch on it later, but we're here now. So, Tron, what's going to happen tomorrow?
He's going to get vaporized, blown out to sea.
I mean, don't these conditions? It seems like the conditions kind of favor him, though.
It's,
no,
the wind's breaking. It's gonna be firm, fast, no wind tomorrow.
I don't think it's gonna be firm.
I think it is. It's been really windy the last couple of days. They're gonna ramp that thing up a notch tomorrow.
Yeah, but the fairways are still gonna be a little bit soggy. Nobody's gonna be getting 20 yards of roll out of them.
I think it's more the greens are going to be super firm.
They're going to be tuck pins too. Those pins are going to be nasty. It's not going to be just about hitting the fairway. It's going to be hitting it on the right side of the fairway, so you have the right angle.
Width, baby. Angles. God, this guy just beats off to width and angles. He's like a geometry fiend. But, all right, so here's the deal. So I think it comes back to our boys on the foreplay pod wanting this to play out like a U.S. Open. And that's not why the Masters has been a great tournament to watch over the years is I don't want to see these guys shoot 71 and grind their tits off. Like, I want to see birdies on 13 and 15 and, you know, maybe one on 12 and maybe one on 16. I don't like seeing. I want to see somebody shoot a Saturday 65 and make a charge.
But yeah, I mean, there's
everybody
not,
just kind of girding their loins.
The wind is what is causing that. I mean, when you got 25 mile an hour wind on a course that's ratcheted up like the way it is, it's going to be just.
Yeah, but
hard.
You said they're going to tuck the pins tomorrow.
Yeah,
I don't
but
want them to tuck the pins.
But no
I want
wind.
Them to put the pins in the Saturday spots where they 20, get the
25 mile an hour wind is what is causing all the scoring trouble. Like, that's. Like the hardest shit to play in the
world.
Yeah,
but you're telling me that the two spots that they put the pin on, was that a different Friday pin on 15 today than it normally is?
I feel like the pin's been remarkably.
Isn't that the Sunday pin where it was today?
An accessible location on 15 either day.
That was really accessible. It was in the back. Like if you're hitting in with like going for in two, the problem is it was going into a north wind. So you're playing into 25 mile an hour wind. Like, the ball's just not going anywhere. It's 530-yard par But that back pin is the most accessible pin to be coming in with
a
long iron.
No, I disagree. I disagree. If it's into the wind, it's a much more – that's a much harder pin to get at.
Why?
If guys are laying up.
If they're laying up. But if you're going for a par 5 and 2 and you're hitting a 3-wood or a long iron, you want the pin back.
For a green that's sloped back to front, I mean, that's a hard pin.
When you're hitting it over water, you need as much green – is you can get to stop the ball. So when you put
Didn't the Rictator hit it in the back water today on 16?
Yeah, he hit a bad shot.
15.
Under the water.
Oh, yeah. Gotcha. Like I feel like that is like one of the most underrated, like that's one of the things when you go to the course in person that blew me away the first time was how in play that back water seems to be. Especially like when it gets firm and the balls are bouncing on the green or you catch a downslope or something, like it's just crazy. Nobody ever thinks about that backwater, but it's always cool to see a couple balls go in there.
I think they need to shave it all the way down. Like they've got that little patch of rough in there. Just shave it all the way down.
Goes away from you though if you're back there. Like it's just so hard.
You
from
just
back
said
there.
You wanted to see more birdies and eagles and 65s, and then you just said, hey, you know, you need to shave it down so ball tumbles into the water.
If they made 15 green go all the way back to the pond on 16, then it would be like guys putting it from. Like dropping it and then putting it like 70 yards, like that would be awesome too. But
Tron goes to England once, and now he's all in on 70 yard putts.
You could get a 3 or a 4 going, but then you could get an 11 or a 12 going too. Like it'd be both ends of the spectrum.
Or a 9.
Yeah, or a 9. I think we've already got the 9 going.
All right. So let's talk about the guys at the top. We got the Rictator. We've got Thomas Peters, my boy. You know,
so good.
My line eye.
All of our boys. That guy fucks.
I don't think you've met anybody who doesn't like Thomas Peters.
Yeah.
What is not to like?
We got Charlie Hoffman, you know, Gary Busey, quasi lookalike. We've got who's the last one?
Sergio.
Yeah.
Vamos.
So we got none of them are major winners. Who do you guys like out of those four to get their first major championship if you're going to get one of them?
God, I don't know.
DJ, go ahead.
I mean, Ricky, I guess. Just Ricky seems like kind of he's had the most recent, you know, the most recent proof that he can kind of get it done. Peter's, you know, remains to be seen what we can expect from him on the weekend. Sergio, there's a pretty good body of evidence.
Shut the fuck up.
On what might happen. I'm telling you, I'm not rooting.
That makes me
hard.
Angry.
I'm not rooting.
You've been Oliver Westwood all week.
No.
Now you're going to dump on Sergio?
No, not at all. Let me finish. I'm not riding as hard as you because it would be condescending to say that I was. But I'm so in for a Sergio win. I would absolutely.
And allegedly, it's Seve's birthday on Sunday.
That's going to be that's going to be beaten into
which
our
Ian Baker Finch wants every Spanish player ever to be Seve. He's like, it doesn't even remind you of Seve. It's like every black person ever reminds you of Tiger, or like every Asian guy ever reminds you of like Jumbo Ozaki. You
know? There were two of the worst takes from the broadcast thus far were, and they both involved my boy John Rahm, were one, Faldo saying that Rahm was his dark horse pick when I believe he was the fifth best or fifth
You're
highest.
That was Shipnuck's boy too.
Yeah, but to call him a dark horse pick.
That's what Shipnuck said too.
That's stupid. And number two was the one Tron, I think you pointed out, was Ian Baker Finch saying, you know, doesn't Rahm's game remind you of Seve? And or can you name all the ways or something? Like, can you think of all the ways his game reminds you of Seve? And it's like, no, literally, I can't think of one.
Literally.
One way.
Yeah. Randy today said that Rahm reminds him of a thumb. Like, just somebody's thumb. Like, he looks like a thumb.
He kind of does.
I'm just saying. But and then he said he couldn't. He looks like somebody, but he couldn't put his finger on it. Something else. Yes.
Well, so of those four, I mean, I'm going with Ricky. What do you guys like?
Who do you got, Tron?
I've been big on the Rictator all week. I think he's got that look in his eye. His shot shape. I mean, I feel like he's kind of hitting a fade off the tee now, but his shot shape, irons, I feel like he hits kind of a preferred draw. But I'm going none of the above. I'm going with the McRib.
I think I'm going none of the above as well. You're going with the McRib?
You're going with Phil. I can tell.
Oh, just definitely going with Phil.
Just with that shit-eating grin on your face.
It's not a video podcast.
I like my boy Peters, but we'll see what he's got on the weekend. I think he
just the fact that like he could have absolutely just packed up and gone home after what did he shoot 40?
Well, he shot even par. He was 5 under through 10, and then
even just to play the last 8 in 5 over. I mean, he could have quickly become the forgotten man, and nobody would have blamed him. And to come back and like do that today was awesome. So yeah. Cool.
He's got game. I kind of want Charlie Hoffman to like win just so people on the internet stop acting like he can't win a golf tournament. And
Charlie Hoffman's a stud.
He's a very good player.
Yeah, he's won four times.
So here's a Charlie Hoffman take. So remember the Heritage a few years ago when it got like mega windy, but he was leading through the wind?
Yeah.
And then, like, I think Westwood ended up winning. Or not Westwood. Sorry, DJ. McDowell ended up winning. But it was crazy windy the whole time. But, like, Hoffman shit down his leg on Saturday. But Neil's going to bed, guys. I feel like Hoffman kind of got his bedwetting out of the way today. And he can kind of go back to being just kind of playing golf tomorrow, whereas instead of my take was he was gonna shit his pants tomorrow, but now he doesn't really. I mean, yeah, he's sleeping on a lead, but he shot 75 or 76 today. Just kind of, you know, he's just doing his thing now. Just kind of another week now.
You know, I think every golfer, like, very rarely does someone win a tournament where they just blow the doors off all week long, and you always have one bad stretch of golf within your tournament. And I think it's how you deal with and respond to that bad stretch. Is like, did Thomas Peters get his one bad stretch out on Thursday afternoon? But it'll be interesting to see. I think the wind really favors a guy like Hoffman because he's such a good ball striker. I think when the wind dies, you're going to see some of these other guys that are a little bit further back that aren't, you know, you look at the leaderboard, it's stacked with ball strikers. But, you know, you look at a guy that survived, I think somebody that's flying like so under the radar is Ryan Moore. Who's just like sitting there at 1 under. Like, I mean, Willie McGirt's been just unbelievable. Which,
all right, so a buddy of mine said today, he said if he had to bet on anybody, including the odds, to win it, just with the odds right now, he would bet on Justin Rose.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking, man. That's what I was thinking, too. So good. Like, he's just, I don't know why I just can't get excited about watching him. He's got every reason to just be a superstar, and I just can't get pumped when I watch him. But like, he hit it was kind of, I don't know, not the flashiest shot in the world, but the shot he hit into 9 today was like just so smart and sexy after watching everybody just get mutumboed from that green and just not being able to control the spin and completely just zipping it back down the hill. Rose just like perfect spot, perfect amount of spin, just snuggles it up in there to like 3 feet. And like a couple of the up and downs he made were just like, he's just so tidy. Like,
he just plays that course well. I think he's finished runner up there twice, but with his under par total, like I think last year he was like 14 under or whatever. His under par total would have won like all but like four or five Masters in both times that he's finished runner up. So it's kind of crazy how you look at that guy and he doesn't have any wins. It just shows how hard it is to win one of these things. I guess
if you think about how many awkward wedge shots this course demands, and you'd think he'd struggle here, but it brings out the best in him, which is crazy. Because I feel like he's always the one that's flubbing those 60-yard pitches, you know?
Yeah.
But he seems to really, he seems to really enjoy this place. But, I mean, like, Keimer going, he shot 78 yesterday and damn near was playing bogey golf on the back nine and then comes back and shoots 68 today. Like, that's insane.
What, who do you...
Spieth? Spieth is...
Right. We need to dedicate about 15 minutes to Spieth here. Yeah. I feel like I mean, everybody on the McRib, like what Spieth has done. Like I just am so blown away by Spieth.
Rory grinded his ass off. He hasn't had the driver either day. He's putted relatively well. He's missed a couple short ones. He got boned up by the flag stick today on 18. But like, I don't know. I feel like he's just. Rory years ago or 3 years ago would have just bailed in and kind of probably pissed away another three or four shots and been at plus five or plus six and then played decent when we all on Saturday and then gone out and shot 66 on Sunday and backdoor top 10. Where now a backdoor top 10 round on Sunday gets him actually close to the lead. Much less if he plays well on Saturday, he's right in the mix.
This is how I feel about Spieth. Like the exact everything you just said is how I feel about Spieth today.
He made a nine.
He made a nine and he's right there. He's four shots off the lead. I mean, he's like just
so scrapey though, man.
That's what I'm saying. The weather conditions favor a guy like Spieth.
Totally.
Like
that's why I'm disappointed he hasn't stepped up more.
No, I'm saying the weekend weather, the nice weather, should favor.
No, I think the bad weather favors Spieth.
No,
yeah, that's why without a quad he'd be tied for the lead.
Yeah, ball striker.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Going into the weekend, he doesn't have an advantage. Andy, why do you think he has an advantage?
He literally tied the scoring record.
He doesn't hit the ball as good as these guys. Like, you know, like Sergio, like when you're in the wind, what happens is strong winds magnify misses. So if you're not exactly on point with your shots, they go further and further offline.
Yeah, but everybody's missing greens, and it's a matter of getting up and down.
That's
and
important, but guys like, you know, like Sergio's still out there hitting 13, 14 greens regardless. Like, you know, like ball striking is greater, and putting is diminished because of the wind adds an element of it. You know, like it's harder for Spieth to can 25-footers in a 20-mile-an-hour wind. So when you
go on Mark Brody on my ass,
it's true. Like the weather has favored guys that are high on ball striking. You look at the leaderboard and it tells the story. The fact that Spieth is right there with a nine and he hasn't even played his best golf yet. He's a guy that obviously is sitting there at even par. Anybody that's been impressed with Rory, you have to be almost doubly impressed with Spieth.
I just don't. I don't know. I think Rory has. I kind of said this before the round, and I'm kind of sticking to it. That like, I just hot take or not, I don't think he's going to be a factor this weekend.
I think he's just hitting a juice shot. I think tomorrow's a career-defining day, especially since he's playing with Kuchar.
I feel like 364 days ago was a defining day also. You know what I mean? Like when he played, he
so was paired like to every
Spieth
round
on Saturday. When he was paired to Spieth on Saturday and just got his doors blown off. I don't know, man.
Spieth, that was non-sporting.
What are you talking about?
He was taking like 4 minutes over every shot.
It was brutal conditions.
Yeah, but he was still breaking the rules.
You're saying they should have Tianlin Guanded him?
Yeah, I think they should have Tianlin Guanded. I think they should have DQ'd his ass even before Tuo.
So
I thought it was disgusting. I thought it was unsporting. It was unsportsmanlike.
Who were you most disappointed by in the first two rounds?
Know who I'm most disappointed by? Your boy Toto. The moment was too big for him.
Told you, man. He's like an 18-year-old from Latin America.
Yeah, Toto couldn't really get anything going this week.
Yeah. It's sad. But another man. How about Stu Hagestad?
Awesome.
Oh, can't say enough good things.
Yeah.
DJ, how about your boy Brian Stewart making the cut?
Big time. How about that whole group?
Yeah, Larry Mize.
Larry Mize made the cut.
That group, Hagestad, Mize.
Here are a couple people who did not make the cut. And keep it through the perspective of the fact that Larry Mize did make the cut. Danny Willett, Jim Furyk, Zach Johnson, Henrik Stenson, Alex Noren, Bubba Watson. Patrick Reed.
Mike Weir.
Woodland. Tyrell Hatton. I think Tyrell Hatton, I mean, I don't know that I had the highest hopes, but he might be he's on my most disappointing list.
He hadn't
Tyrell Shadow.
Yeah, that was brutal.
He hadn't finished outside like the top 10 in like 6-8 weeks, and then just comes to Augusta and he just pukes all over himself.
Yeah, not good.
Not good.
You know who I'm disappointed in, but optimistic about is Louis. Completely ejected yesterday, and then fought back today and got it back to 4 over.
I feel like he does that. He did that last year too. Just had one terrible round. He was like 5 over after 6 or 4 over after 6.
I'm gonna pull up the tee times for tomorrow. This is there's some like really
they're so good.
Interesting.
Gonna be so good.
Yeah.
So is Day playing with Knox?
Yeah.
Yeah. God, I hope Day withdraws, like due to like lack of liquidity or something. All right. Berger Grace, that's a big dick. Let's see. You got Griot and Thomas, that's savory. Stricker Oosthuizen.
Hey, let's
sign me up. Like that's one of those rounds that you go out early, follow them for the first 9, and then come back and follow the leaders for 18.
Let me tell you what the tee time of the day is. It's Mark Leishman versus Lee Westwood.
How many shots you want?
DJ and I have a $20 bet on these two on who performs better at the Masters.
I feel like a divorced parent caught in the middle because I like both these guys.
It's Lee Westwood at Augusta is just so solid. He had a rough close to today's round, but I think he's right there. I think he's a guy that can make a charge.
The one commentator termed it as tragic, or that's that's very unfortunate or something after he missed the. Missed the short one on 17 or 18.
Yeah, it's weird. He's usually rock solid over there.
I heard another announcer talking about his putting stroke, and they're like, "See that right hand? How it gets involved? It's a very unreliable way to putt."
That's not. Yeah, that was. Yeah, he was just shitting all over him.
I feel like I was pretty classy about the hockey sticks today, by the way. Just the fact that Westwood and Leishman are tied after 36 is like you can just I can let you buy out of the bet for 19 right now if you want.
So I feel like people have been bitching about
Westwood versus Leishman over the final two rounds. Like there's no way.
I'm sticking by my
so
man.
You guys are going straight up the rest of the tournament. Leishman versus Westwood for 20.
Oh yeah,
it was the bet that we made the bet on Wednesday.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm sticking with my man.
There's no way I already spent the money.
I feel like all the pairings for the rest of the time are probably, they're 10 times better than the pairings for the first two rounds. Like, it's like the guys that were meant to be paired together are paired together. Like the Els-Duffner pairing. Like, those guys are going to hit more greens and miss more putts than any pairing in the history of the Masters. Matsuyama, Keimer. Like, that's awesome. Kuchar, McIlroy. Spieth, Mickelson.
Gotta trust the
Rose
process.
And Scott. Like, this is like Rahm and Couples. Like, Couples are just gonna be asking Rahm about Spanish chicks the whole time. Like, there's so many good groupings tomorrow. Who was the Swedish guy a few years back?
Peter Hansen.
Like, hello, I'm Peter Hansen. To just like put a put a damper on the proceedings, you know? I haven't been this excited for a Saturday of the Masters
What about Spieth Mickelson?
That's what I'm saying. Like,
no, where's DJ's head going to be with that one?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I don't know. I mean, my heart is picking Phil this week, but, like, he made some sloppy mistakes coming in, man.
He said he was
is
tired.
Is still trying to win the tournament, though? Or does he just want to win? Is he just trying to stack up a bunch of presses?
I think he's getting ready for Aaron Hills. I think he's trying to get some reps for Aaron Hills.
He's hitting the shots demanded of Dana Herdson and Michael Fry, or Michael Herdson and Dana Fry at Augusta. He's taking the same shots and just practicing in Augusta.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I mean, I don't know. That the miss long on 16 was, like, not good. Hard, like, just a brutal spot to get up and down. Missing in the bunker on 17 was bad. I think he only had, like, 140 or something. It's, I don't know. Not good.
All right. Drive on 18 is bad. All right, so who do you have tomorrow, Spieth or Mickelson?
Spieth.
Oh, yeah. How many?
3.
Wow, okay.
67-70.
Okay. So they're both probably near the lead tomorrow then, or leading.
Spieth, for sure, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't want to go overboard on this, but, like, that was, like, so impressive today. I think he's going to be absolutely just jacked to go out there tomorrow and put up a low number.
All right, Rahm and Couples. All right, well, Andy, go
let's
back.
Just talk. We got to just talk Fred Couples for a minute here.
Yeah,
Mickelson, Spieth. Who do you like tomorrow?
Oh, Mickelson, Spieth. I Spieth. I mean, I think he gets himself within 2-3 shots of the lead.
I think Mickelson ties one on tomorrow.
Oh, would love that.
It's a round for the ages tomorrow.
I just don't think he's going to drive the ball well enough.
It got a little slippery at the end.
His awareness
is good right now, though.
He doesn't know what the swing plane is.
I mean, he probably knows.
He's playing with the epic, though, guys. I mean,
That doesn't make any difference if you're miles off plane.
All right, Rahm versus Couples. Can we talk about Couples for a little bit?
Let's, please. Tell us, first of all, you're sitting there with your son just watching the namesake today. What was that like?
Well, it's nice. Freddie's a double-edged sword. I can, when Freddie Jacobson plays well, I call him the junk man, and when Freddie Couples plays well, I call him Boom Boom. So it's like all good things, you know? I think Couples got a little squirrely on some of the lines he was taking were a little bit over aggressive today. I can't remember if it was 14 or 17, which 17 I don't much care for 17. 14's a great hole. 17 should be a short par four. They should bring Corin Crenshaw in, redesign it, short par four. Bring some drama to the back.
I keep going back and forth on this, and like, I keep wavering between I like 17 and I don't like 17. And no, I think it's good. I think it's good when they have. I think it's good when they have the pin on 18 in a good spot. You know what I mean? Like the Sunday pin on 18, like it's you can
I feel like the pin today,
make birdies for sure. So I feel like 17 is like the last like big test that you got to get through, and then you can make a birdie on 18.
I felt like the pin today on 18 should be the Sunday pin in the middle of those two ridges.
It's pretty close to that. I think they just move it to the left a little bit.
Just over the left. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you can use that sideboard on the right a little bit more today, at least.
Yeah.
That 17th green's pretty sweet, I think. Yeah.
No, it's awesome. That's what I'm saying. It's a great green. Make it a true risk reward.
If you hit a good drive, you get up on top of that hill. If you don't, your shot, you've got that upslope. It's got a unique little twist there where, you know, if you hit a really good drive, you're rewarded with like a great, you know, shot in versus like an average drive, or if you lay back, you get that upslope, which makes that shot kind of tough.
I feel like you're also coming off 13, 14, 15, 16. Which are all holes you can make some noise on. I don't know. I kind of like having a little punch back.
I don't know, man. 14 can get kind of gnarly with where they.
Yeah, the green is nasty.
On that green too.
Yeah,
bunkerless
but
hole.
I think that's my only thing about Augusta is, and I think it's probably why 3 has grown on me over the years too. Is there's not really a truly risk reward drivable hole with how they've moved 3 back over the years, and you know it's like there needs to be something.
I feel like all the par fives kind of fill that for me.
Yeah, and I'm gonna get absolutely roasted by people for even suggesting changes or anything like this. So
11's got to change. I'll tell you that much. It's just
11 sucks.
So boring now. It's tight.
Just 7 and 11 are probably the two worst holes on the course now.
Yeah, 11, they just freaked out because everybody was hitting wedges in. You know,
that was better. It just keep tucking the pin over to the left and make the green fast as shit. And then
I love 11 when I don't know what you'd have to do if you have to just shorten it by like 20 yards or something, but like seeing guys come into that green and like seeing them kind of like play to the right
actually
side,
take on the pin,
yeah, and take it on, yeah. And like seeing balls go up to the water, and like that gets cool, but it's just like I don't know if it's a little too long or a little too tight, or maybe it's just a little too soft this week or something.
It's,
I don't know,
but like they lengthened it too much, and then they added all the trees down the right, and then yeah. You know, it's basically become like, and I guess it goes back to that, I think it was Hogan or somebody where it was like, yeah, if you hit the green on 11, you were aiming 20 yards too far left, but
right.
You know, I don't know, I feel like at the least a hole should dictate trying to hit the green, you know. And all the bailouts to the right just kind of piss me off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And depending where the pin is, that chip can get spicy though, which is fun.
Well, that's the thing. If you put the pin front right, that's the spiciest chip on the course right there.
Well, I think what people are, what they do there is they just hedge their bets. It's like, okay, if I make a 5 here, it's not the biggest deal. Like I just can't make a 6 or a 7. So
right.
You know, if you bail right, you still have a chance at 4. And you take all the big number out of play, really.
Has made 12 so good this week.
What do you think this cutoff right now is for a guy that can win? Do you think like 1 over, 2 over?
I think 2.
2?
2 for me. Yeah.
So the people at 2 are Schwartzel, Matsuyama, and Keimer.
Hot Charl.
Who's it?
I don't know. I could see Matsuyama just taking it deep on the weekend. Bunch of people at three.
Yeah, tons of people at three.
Ernie, Duffner, Westwood, Leishman, Haas, Jimmy Walker, Rusty Henley, your boy Brendan Steele, B. Stewart.
Outside of B. Stewart.
Stewart Hagestad.
Hagestad.
And, Casey, of Kepka. Henley and
Casey could go low.
Stewart. Nobody else is making a run out of that group.
I could see Casey making a run.
Me too. Or Kepka.
Casey's there too. Oh, yeah.
Casey and Kepka. Yeah.
Kepka might stink though.
Who stunk the most?
Well, I think the question is who doesn't stink. Besides DJ.
DJ, Spieth, and Rahm. I would say Spieth, DJ, and Rahm are the only players that don't stink.
Peters hasn't stunk.
He hasn't stunk.
You know, I think Willie McGirt, Dirt McGirt, hasn't stunk.
No, I'm not talking about the Masters. I'm talking about like in general. Like, but here's the thing: if everybody stinks, then does anybody stink?
Nobody stinks. That's the other thing. Exactly. Nobody stinks.
Yeah, this is getting pretty conceptual.
It's a philosophical question.
This is getting cut out.
Like bookmark it.
All right, so I'm gonna hit you guys both just rapid fire answer. Okay. Who wins these matchups? All right, okay. Justin Rose, Adam Scott.
Rose.
Scott.
Peters, Fowler.
Ugh. Man, I'm gonna say Peters. Loved watching him today.
I'm gonna say Fowler. I think Peters he's still marinating a little bit.
All right, we're gonna go with Kuchar, McIlroy. DJ, please pick Kuchar.
I'm gonna say, oh man, this is one. We're talking about one round of golf.
One round of golf.
Won't you do it? Don't do it. Actually, do it. Do it, DJ.
I'm gonna say McIlroy, only because it's Saturday. If it's Sunday, he's making a big backdoor charge.
They both would be.
Wait! No. All right. Oh, okay. So you're saying Kuchar shits his pants on Saturdays?
I'm saying if Kuchar's starting the day five back on Sunday, he's going out at 1 PM and putting up a 67.
But if he's going back if he's going out in the lead,
yeah,
on Saturday he's shooting 77, right?
Right. But tomorrow, okay, with like a chance to put himself in position, I don't think he's gonna do it.
Obviously McIlroy.
Here's a guy, you know, he had top 10 last year. Soren Kjeldsen and Hot Charles.
I'm on team Big Dane. Or Little Dane.
Who was it? Oh, Kjeldsen and Schwartzel?
Yeah.
Kjeldsen.
I'm thinking Kjeldsen.
All right.
Unequivocally.
We'll
sorry, Andy.
What about Sergio and Charlie Hoffman?
Yeah, Sergio, Charlie
Hoffman. I'm taking I don't know. I'll take Charlie Hoffman. I don't think he's going to get blown away tomorrow. I don't think he's gonna get blown away,
but I think Sergio's gonna shoot a historically relevant round.
All right, who's your pick to win?
Man, I'm going Spieth, all the way back from the dead, Lazarus.
I'm gonna shock the world. Richard Flower blooms.
I don't think that's that shocking. He's tied for the lead.
I don't know. I think Richard Flower does it. I think he's.
I hope so.
He ascends to the throne, and then Golf Digest just like it's like a supernova at Golf Digest headquarters, and they just cream themselves.
Supernova would be imploding on itself. It'd be a dead star.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, they just can't hit it.
Wins, and then they implode on themselves.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Because there's so much millennial content.
The moment's too big.
All right, I'm gonna take. I'm going with my boy Peters. You know, I've been saying master sleeper for months now, so I'm gonna stick with it now that he's here.
Love it.
So let's get you guys out on a fried egg tradition here of a little overrated, underrated, rapid fire.
Best.
So we're gonna start with Augusta National in general.
Underrated.
Properly rated.
Oh no, you can't do that.
You can't do that.
Yeah, you can.
No way.
No. It's number two.
You can't.
It's number two or three course in the world.
Andy's all about hot takes, man. He needs it.
I'm gonna say it's overrated until they redo the bunkering.
Okay. See?
That's a good take.
The next one we'll go with Curtis Lux Apparel.
I think overrated. I'm not. I know you like it. I'm out.
I'm gonna say underrated. So people have been. Probably seven or eight people have floated the question to me today on Twitter. What do you think about Curtis Locke and just getting hot after him? I like him. I think Aussies are exempt from me hating on him from wearing outrageous shit. So I'm gonna say underrated. If he has enough confidence to wear it and. Made the cut as an amateur, although an amateur with an asterisk. I think he fucked.
Can I challenge that very briefly and say, does this include the Operation Iraqi Freedom outfit that Adam Scott wore yesterday?
What does that have to do with Curtis Luck?
You said Australians are exempt from fashion.
Oh no! Yeah. Okay. Adam Scott. Well, Adam Scott's a globalist.
Just a complete tanimal yesterday.
He's a globalist. So.
okay.
He's a Swiss citizen, I think. So yeah, I can we can say as much bad stuff as we want about Adam Scott's apparel yesterday.
I just feel like that was
a
very, very, very rare miss. I feel like he's usually number one or two in the fashion power rankings.
Yeah, I think Uniqlo led him down a uniquely awful path yesterday.
Yeah.
We'll go with Brian Stewart.
I'm gonna say underrated because I feel like he's not rated. Like, I feel like he has a lot of upside because he just hasn't been rated yet. He's a PGA Tour winner, man. I think it was like a 36 hole event, but you know, still.
He beat Andy's boy Jamie Lovemark. I'm going to say he's underrated. I'm going to give him a lot of credit. I just pulled up his OWGR. He missed a few cuts, and then he went in T16 at Bridgestone, and then he's been playing relatively well. He's been making a lot of cuts this year. So
you know what? Anyone who just kind of keeps their card and just hangs on tour for like 5 years, whatever, like underrated. That's an underrated skill.
All right.
Especially when you're like the most nondescript guy in the world, and like all of your revenue is coming from on-course earnings. Like, I think there's something to be said for that.
Totally agree.
All right.
I also love last thing about Brian Stewart. I know we're dedicating a lot of time, but this is another one of my things. Is that I love when these guys live. In like places that are not tour player havens,
Where's he live?
He lives in Michigan.
Oh, he's in Jackson, Michigan.
Yeah, so cool. Him, Leishman, Streb, Stricker, Troy Merritt.
You bang this drum nonstop.
I love it. It's
like,
awesome.
Leishman lives in Virginia Beach. Like it's some cross to bear to live in Virginia Beach, Virginia.
No. I don't mean that at all. I just mean it's awesome that when guys make decisions the way that we make decisions, which is like,
yeah
my wife's family is from there, so that's where we live. Stating
Scrub plays in a heated barn.
Yeah, exactly. It's awesome.
All right, last overrated, underrated. Ernie L's career.
Drastically underrated.
I'm going to say I love Big Ern. He's one of my favorite human beings.
Uh-oh.
But I'm gonna say overrated. I think Ernie should have won 8 majors.
I think Ernie's career very similar to another man that's in the top 20 that constantly gets put on a top 10 player of all time pedestal. Phil Mickelson.
Man, I don't think we have enough time in the podcast to get into your hatred for this.
I mean, Ernie Els.
Let's get into this.
Ernie Els made it to the top of the mountain multiple times. He won Player of the Years. He was the number one ranked player in the world when Tiger was around. Phil's never done it.
You bang on Phil for not being the number one player in the world
player in the world. Player of the Year, or won a money list. In my book, you got to be you have to be the best player at least once in a year to be a top 10 player of all time.
All right, so here's a question for you. Was Bill Russell ever the best player in the NBA?
I think he won some MVPs.
Or was Tim Duncan ever the best player in the NBA?
I think he won like 2 or 3 MVPs also.
Yeah, but would you take him over anybody else?
I think Tim Duncan was the best player in the generation. He was better than Kobe.
Okay. I'm not getting anywhere with this take then.
That's a consistent take. I've heard him say that before. Unprovoked. We're just walking around the golf course in Austin and he started talking about how Tim Duncan's the best player of all time.
Not of all time, of that generation. It's similar. Phil's flashier. He says more in front of the media, but I think Ernie Els has the same career. And
but Phil was never gifted a major, either.
Yeah.
I mean, Ernie was gifted a major
until this week.
Yeah. Whatever.
So all right. So Ernie has what, 4 majors?
I think he's got 2 Britishes. He's got
2 Britishes and 2 U.S. Opens.
2 U.S. Opens, yeah.
Oakmont, right. Congressional, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Lytham, and Muirfield, right?
Yeah. I don't know how many wins. I don't know how their wins stack up, but...
It's probably pretty close.
Ernie was number one in the world. Ernie was Ernie won a money list. Ernie was Player of the Year. Same amount of majors.
I do think the one thing that helps Ernie's case is the fact that Ernie was a global player. I think it can be said for that. Where, granted, he's had a G550 for like 20 years now. And being a global player isn't all that hard, but...
Globalist.
But I mean, the guys played a shitload of golf all over the world for a long time,
mm-hmm.
and done it consistently. And like that was something at Bay Hill. Like somebody asked him, he came out on the putting green and he had his charity event down in Jupiter or wherever the day before. And somebody asked him if he had flown up from Jupiter or if he drove, and he had to think about it. He was like, And they're like, "Oh, Big Earn, did you drive or did you fly today?" And he's like, "I drove."
You know,
like it took him a little while.
You know, one of the other things about
that's powerful.
Earn is apparently one of the most generous guys to younger players, giving them rides on the jet all the time as long as they support his charity outing. So, you know, he's a good guy too.
He's a sportsman. Ernie's a sportsman.
I'm on Big Earn and Phil being on about the same tier. There, you know, you can have your arguments either way, but I think Phil is drastically overrated in the career scope.
All right, so going back to your original question, I think Ernie's career is probably overrated in the grand scheme of things just because I don't think he accomplished as much as his talent warranted. But I think Mickelson's career is also overrated in the grand scheme of things because I think he was capable of much more as well. So that's not really a value judgment on Ernie as it is just the sheer competitiveness of the
What if you include Phil's potential wins, meaning like wins he could have gotten if he was trying?
Yeah, but then you know what, man? I get back to that, and like I think that's a bad take on my part because like Phil won the Houston Open one year. Like, there's no way that he would have won the Houston Open. Like, there's no way he was even trying to win the Houston Open, but he just won that. By default, because he just fell into that win. Like
I think if I remember, he shot like 62 on Saturday.
And then he was like, "Oh shit!"
Yeah, and then so he just caught a heater, and then he was like, "All right, well, I could probably win.
I might as well bank $1.1 million." And then get in with Big Oil and probably fuel up my jet for the next 5 years. All right, Andy, so you got Peters winning it, DJ, you have Spieth winning it,
and you got Rick
and I have Fowler winning it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the one matchup we didn't do is McGirt Moore tomorrow.
Ooh.
I'm going Moore.
I was on McGirt on Wednesday.
You're going to ride it till she bucks?
I mean, but I just was on Moore earlier. That's a tough one. That's the twosome that's going to get the least amount of airtime tomorrow that I'm the most intrigued to watch.
I love watching Ryan Moore.
I just hate how he, like, has to wiggle into his shots. You know how he does, like, his, like, shimmy before he...
Yeah.
It's just like...
He's unorthodox, man. I love it.
I'm going to go with Ryan Moore. I'm not going with McGirt. I think the moment's going to be too big for him.
Dirt McGirt.
All right, what else do we need to cover?
I think that's it. I think we got to keep this short so people can listen to it before the telecast.
So, that's already been like
we got to keep it short. We're at an hour and 5 minutes.
All right, well, all right. Enjoy tomorrow. Good having you guys on.
Thanks, man.
All right.